They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Is a Dow at 16,000 high enough for now?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. For the first time, the Dow started the day above 16,000. That's a far cry from the 36,000 a famous financial commentator once forecast in the 1990s, but it's something. In early trading, it got to 16,006, and the S&P was 3 points shy of 1,800. On Fridays, we check in with Chris Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial. Morning, my friend.
Good morning, David.
So the Dow at 16,003, the S&P teasingly close to 1,800. We keep hearing arguments, right, Chris, that people have to buy stocks because interest rates are so low and the alternatives stink. What do you think, 16,000-ish here to stay?
I think that there's still some upside left in the stock market for exactly that reason, but it's the kind of reasoning that drives me crazy, right? Because when people buy something because they have to, rather than it's a bargain at these levels, it's sort of inviting a correction. And actually, Robert Shiller, the economist who won the Nobel Prize this year for empirical analysis of asset prices, he has a measure of PEs called cycle-adjusted PEs, which is already waving a yellow flag, he says, not a red flag. So still
red
might
flag.
Have some upside, but could be a big correction coming, he says.
A caution signal from a Nobel laureate, so we'll keep an eye on that. Chris Lowe at FTN Financial, thank you very much for this.
Thank you, David.
All right. Now, could you imagine the horror of being stuck next to me on a plane as I use my annoying radio voice to bray away at my cell phone? The FCC is moving toward lifting the ban on in-flight phone calls above 10,000 feet, Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
Research has debunked any navigation danger from cell phone calls in flight, so in December, the FCC will propose lifting the ban. Airlines will then have to decide whether to allow calls. The Flight Attendants Union says cell phones could distract passengers in an emergency. Curtis Grimm at the University of Maryland says many consumers think it's a bad idea, too.
The trends are for airlines to put more and more seats into the same space. So I think many people would object to having those phone calls kind of going on in such a cramped space.
Like commuter railroads, airlines could designate special rows or sections of the plane for cell callers.
Airlines are good at differential pricing and squeezing out some more money from consumers for anything.
On the other hand, just like a haze used to drift forward from the smoking section, loud voices could be overheard several rows away, raising everyone's temperature on board. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Once bought a Chrysler that had dealer plates with the stars and stripes and the slogan, America got my vote. Got it home to find out that it wasn't quite made in America. The engine was from Mitsubishi of Japan and the whole thing was assembled in Canada. Tomorrow, new rules go into effect aimed at more carefully describing where meat comes from instead of lamb from New Zealand or beef from the USA. Labels would have information about where livestock was born, raised, slaughtered. It stems from a complaint by the World Trade Organization. Iowa Senator Tom Harkin is among those quoted saying consumers want labels with more detail, and they should have it. But there are costs. Daniel Sumner is a professor of agricultural economics at the University of California, Davis. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning.
Give me a sense of what is expected to happen starting tomorrow. Labels will start to have to say the meat is from Romania or New Zealand?
What they've done is required a multiple of labels. If you run Canadian cattle, those have to be labeled born in Canada, raised in Canada, slaughtered in the United States. You can imagine the meat packer, things are moving quickly, and for them then to keep track of each individual animal just adds costs. And in fact, what we found was a lot of meat packers just didn't bother. They said to the Canadian or Mexican suppliers, don't bother to ship any livestock. Oh, we're not going to take any of those.
Well, it's interesting, though. I have noticed one division that it's more meat processors versus some cattle ranchers, because some U.S. cattle ranchers like this. They think it'll be maybe U.S.-raised cattle will fetch a premium since they're perhaps easier to track.
There's a group called the Ranchers and Cattlemen Legal Fund. So they just don't like the idea of imports at all because imports do compete with them. Now, always along, anybody could say U.S. only on a label. Hardly anybody cares. But instead of recognizing that, what we've done is imposed a mandatory label with all kinds of detail that, frankly, most of us don't even know what it means.
So you must find it frustrating when you hear consumers make the argument they want to know that their feta cheese comes from Bulgaria. They want to know their beer's from Czechoslovakia. Why can't there be clear rules for where the lamb is from?
So we're not talking about labeling where it's from. We're labeling where the calf might have been born or where the baby pig started out. If Budweiser beer buys some hops from Canada, to then label the beer as product of Canada. 90% of the value, 90% of the weight of the calf is all a product of the United States. So it's really a different thing.
Daniel Sumner, professor of agricultural economics at UC Davis, thank you very much for this.
Yep, no problem.
And according to the Wall Street Journal this morning, Charter Communications is gearing up to try to buy Time Warner Cable. Consolidation in the cable TV industry amid digital competition is the rubric there. Charter Communications stock was up in early trading, and Time Warner Cable stock was up dramatically at the start of the day. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.